From evangelicals and President Trump to gun control to discouragement in the church, all coming your way today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, it happened again. It happened again this past Saturday when I was speaking from the last chapter of my book, Saving a Sick America. The chapter is called The Church's Great Opportunity. Great crowd squeezed into a great room at a fabulously large church facility near Charlotte, North Carolina. The annual Southern Evangelical Seminary Apologetics Conference, massive conference, thousands of people in attendance. And it happened again as I spoke on this theme of the church's great opportunity. And it's not too late for America. The place was electric with excitement. And afterwards, just as when I've spoken on this in previous weeks, afterwards, there was a line of people coming to my book table, wanting me to sign a copy of the book for them. But the thing that I'm talking about that happened was this supernatural impartation of encouragement. And person after person with glowing smiles thanked me for the encouragement and said, it's just what we need to hear. So my question, and I wrote about it over the weekend, my question is, why are so many believers so discouraged? This is Michael Brown. You're listening to The Line of Fire. My joy to be with you today. To get involved in the conversation, the number to call 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. If you're listening on the audio feed on Facebook, watching the video feed on YouTube, same number for you to call in, as well as all of our radio listeners, 866-34-TRUTH. Why is it that so many believers seem to be discouraged about the state of the church and the state of America, in such a way that when I bring this word, which is not starry-eyed optimism, which is not stick your head in the sand and deny reality optimism, but it is a word-based, historically-based, faith-based optimism. Why is it that people are so supernaturally lifted? Now, I know the truth of the subject matter that I'm conveying, and if you've read Saving a Sick America, you know this. What I'm conveying is very encouraging, based on history. And I know God has given me a certain gift to encourage and build faith. He's put faith in me that helps faith in you come alive. But it just seems odd to me that so many believers, people who have good relationships with the Lord, so many believers who are in good churches where their pastors are not bringing negative, destructive, discouraging messages, that in so many cases, people are still so discouraged. So I gave it some prayerful thought over the weekend. I'd love to hear your thoughts as well, but we'll be getting into that later in the broadcast. Also, in the next segment, I'm going to dive in with some thoughts on evangelicals and President Trump. And are we selling our soul in support of him, or do we have our eyes wide open? We'll talk about that. And then we will get into a discussion about gun control. There was a gunshot survivor meeting this past weekend. We're going to have a discussion about this, and this will be another place where you can weigh in. So a lot to talk about on the broadcast today. So glad that we can be together at this time of the year, at this time of life, at this season in the world. Man, it would have been amazing to live in certain times during the Bible and see certain things happen firsthand, but I'm thrilled to be alive right now and have this opportunity in America to be a witness in a time when America really needs the gospel. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
But I pledge that in a Trump administration, our nation's religious heritage would be cherished, protected, and defended like you have never seen before. That's what's happening.
Is God using Donald Trump in many positive ways, despite his obvious failings and despite things he says and does you wish he wouldn't say and do, despite negative qualities of his character or persona or leadership style? Easy to criticize, but could it be that God is using him in the midst of all this for positive change, for religious liberties, for pro-life, for standing against radical LGBT activism, standing for Israel? There's a recent article on redstate.com, Kimberly Ross. It's entitled, "Trump's Cheap Merry Christmas Christianity Continues to Sway Evangelicals." And she writes, "Last year, congregants at the Church of Trump stormed into polling places nationwide and voted a godless reality star into the highest office in the land." She continues, "It's been crystal clear that too many evangelical Trump supporters have not only placed their political faith in the real estate magnet, they've become sold-out disciples for him. It seems as if, in their eyes, the GOP and Christianity are interchangeable." And she took particular issue with his speech at the Values Voter Summit. Let's listen to more of what he had to say. This is the FRC, Family Research Council, their annual Values Voter Summit. This is the first time a sitting president has spoken there. You heard that first clip from that very summit. Listen to what else he had to say.
"In America, we don't worship government, we worship God. The American founders invoked our Creator four times in the Declaration of Independence. Four times. How times have changed, but you know what? Now they're changing back again. Just remember that. We are stopping cold the attacks on Judeo-Christian values."
All right. Significant comments. And then he also said this. He mentioned this in his campaign. He brought it up again now because we're in October, talking about Merry Christmas. Listen to what he said.
"You know, we're getting near that beautiful Christmas season that people don't talk about anymore. They don't use the word Christmas because it's not politically correct. You go to department stores and they'll say Happy New Year and they'll say other things and it'll be red. They'll have it painted, but they don't say, well, guess what? We're saying Merry Christmas again."
All right, so Kimberly Ross takes issue with that. When he says those words, she says, "Home run," and the crowd goes wild. She says, "The proud, starry-eyed evangelicals who cast their ballot for the Christian-in-Chief believe Trump has miraculously brought faith back to the nation, and that is all that matters." To be candid here, what's happened is that Kimberly Ross has overshot her mark. If she said that too many evangelicals make excuses for the president, if she said that too many evangelicals are putting too much trust in the president to bring about positive change, there could have been validity to those charges. But I don't know anyone, well, maybe one or two people have made some ridiculous statements, but I don't know any leader that looks to Donald Trump as Christian in chief. And those of us who voted for him did so with great hesitation and trepidation and soul searching. Now, many voted enthusiastically, but many of us didn't because we were concerned, because we knew it would be a mixed bag. And basically, we got what we were expecting to get for better or for worse. Now, we keep praying for him to really know the Lord and grow in the Lord and bear fruit as a follower of Jesus. If he's never truly come to know the Lord, having heard the gospel these many months, we pray that he will. If he's somehow an absolute babe, infant Christian, we pray that he'll grow. All right, I don't see the fruit of him knowing the Lord, but others closer claim there's some relationship. Let God be the judge. Certainly, there is not maturity. Certainly, there is not fruit. We recognize that. But we're getting what we expected. We're getting this guy who is rough and tumble, who is fearless, who is controversial, who's often, in my view, unwise in things he puts out, even divisive, and yet keeping a lot of his promises. Now, certain things he hasn't done yet. For example, he hasn't moved the embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, but he's done other things that have been very encouraging for Israel, even standing up to Iran, and he has a much better relationship with Israel than President Obama did. And certainly he's been consistent in his nominees for the courts, for the Supreme Court and the federal courts, one after another, that are excellent. And in addition to that, he has stood up for our religious liberties on a number of different occasions in a number of different ways. And things that Department of Justice is issuing under Attorney General Sessions have been very positive. And some are helping turn back the tide of LGBT activism. In fact, if you noticed on the screen behind the president as he's speaking, it said AFA Action, it's American Family Association. They're branded as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. They went after me. They went after Ben Carson. I mean, they disqualify themselves day by day. They've gone off to FRC as a hate group, and they have blood on their hands because the guy that tried to carry out a massacre at FRC got the information from SPLC. And even the shooter, Steve Scalise, is an avid follower of SPLC from what I understand. And here there are folks very upset reporting that a flyer advertising the book Hazards of Homosexuality, this was distributed at the Values Voter Summit. I have the book, and it's giving you data. It's giving you facts and information about the health hazards of homosexuality, just like you have health hazards of tobacco smoking and health hazards of obesity. There are health hazards associated with homosexual practice, and people should know about it. If you care about people, they should know about it. Well, there's outrage. How could this be? These were circulated. This further proves that these are hate groups and mass resistance who put the book out. They've been on the hate list since 2008 of SPLC, which in many cases is actually a badge of honor. All that to say that the president has done many things that are positive and that we should appreciate and should commend him for without excusing the things that are wrong. The idea that people are disciples in the church of Trump or looking to him as Christian in chief or buying into this shallow Merry Christmas Christianity, I'm sure some are, but that's the minority. Others that I know, we have our eyes wide open. My friends who are on the president's evangelical advisory board try to speak into his life, encourage and pray for him, but then speak into his life and challenge him to do things in a righteous way and try to reach out to others in his administration to try to get them to do things in a righteous way, to be bridge builders, to be unifiers, to be peacemakers. So there may be some who have sold their souls in defense of the president, and I don't mean literally, but figuratively, sold their souls in defense of the president or in turning a blind eye to things that he does where we should say, hey, I don't like that. I disagree with that. I don't want my witness to be hurt, all right, out of association with the president. I support him as our president. I pray for him. I supported President Obama as our president, prayed for him. I militantly differ with him on various stands. I differ with Donald Trump more on some of his ways of doing things in words than on some of the stands that he's taken. But bottom line is, my allegiance is to Jesus. My allegiance is to following God. My allegiance is to what's written in the Word. And to the extent that a leader is in harmony with that, I will encourage them. And when they're not, I will call them to account. That's our role. We do that with our votes. We do that in 100 other ways. So it's this overreaction that concerns me. And look, Merry Christmas, that's not a big deal. It is not a big deal. I did not vote for Donald Trump because he said we're going to bring Merry Christmas back. Look, I'm a Jewish believer in Jesus. Merry Christmas just doesn't mean that much to me anyway. But in the overall scheme of things, I don't think it's that important. However, when you have the president, the first sitting president, addressing the Values Voter Summit, and yes, preaching to the choir, and yes, appealing to an evangelical base, but in a way that is consistent with what he has thus far done as far as taking stands and passing legislation and pushing for certain things and nominating certain things. To that extent, yeah, he's preaching to the choir, he's playing to his base, but what do you expect the base to do when he talks about Merry Christmas? Do you expect them to boo? So no, that's a minor thing. When Kimberly Ross says, look, people get all excited about that, it's misplaced, I agree. But in the larger context of the war against religion that's in our culture today. And us having a president, no, not a perfect Christian man, not a model Christian man, maybe not even a Christian man at all at this point. But to have someone say, I'm standing up for you, that's meaningful, and we appreciate it, and we should. But if you want to know who I'm preaching as Savior, it's not Donald Trump, it's Jesus the Lord. All right, we come back, we will take your calls, get your impressions on what I have to say. Do you think we've heard our witness, even by voting for President Trump, would it have been better not to vote at all or vote for Hillary Clinton? We'll talk about it. Sure, 866-348-7884, and we'll continue to talk about discouragement among the people of God. Why is it there? We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, how about a little teamwork? 866-348-7884. How about a little teamwork? If you have my book, Saving a Sick America, maybe you pre-ordered one of the signed numbered copies, maybe you got them the first few weeks that they came out, the book out now. How many weeks? About 3 weeks so far. So maybe you've gotten a copy at your local bookstore or heard me speak at a conference, got the book, wherever it is, downloaded on Kindle, Audible. If you've read the book, please take a minute to post a review on Amazon. If the book blessed you, if it encouraged you, if you found it informative, eye-opening, take a moment to do that. Go to Amazon, post a review there. It's a good way of announcing the book to others, just a great way to team together. So I write the book, you read the book. If you post the review, that helps others. It can just be one line, you know, a book really blessed. I mean, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but just whatever. Or it could be a paragraph or two if you want to get into things or discuss content. But that really helps others find out about the book. I know when I'm going to purchase something, I look at reviews, I read reviews, and that's often the best way to find out about something. So take a moment to do that. I really do appreciate it. If you don't have the book yet, go to savingasickamerica.com to find out more. Savingasickamerica.com. Of course, you can order in your local bookstores or any of the online dealers, Amazon or any of the others. All right. Before I get to this subject of discouragement, I want to get to your calls as well. The idea that the world can tell us what hurts our witness, sometimes it's right and sometimes it's wrong. In other words, there are people that are people of conscience, that I'm talking about worldly, secular people, but they're people of conscience. They're the people with certain moral values, obviously needing the Lord and fallen like the rest of us. But they are grieved by hypocrisy. They see things that are double standards, and it bothers them. And when they see that in the church, it bothers them. I'm not Catholic, but certainly the scandal with pedophile priests and things like that, that terribly, rightly so, hurts the larger witness of the Catholic Church. So when we have a scandal with one of our evangelical leaders, a TV preacher, well-known leader, and they're caught in sexual sin or financial sin, of course that hurts our witness, and rightly so, tragically so. It's something all of us need to consider in leadership in terms of the influence we have for good or for bad. At the same time, the world is often giving us advice. You know, if you just change your views on homosexuality, we'd listen to you more. Well, that's not going to happen. If you just change your views on abortion, we'd listen to you more. Well, that's not going to happen. If you just more open to other religions also being true, and you don't just need Jesus, we'd listen to you more. Well, that's not going to happen. You know, it's just like when secular TV is giving the Republicans advice on what to do to improve their cause or get more followers or voters. You think they're not doing that because they care. They're getting that just to get them to cave in. So I know that the enthusiastic support of President Trump by some evangelicals and almost the saint, you know, making him into some kind of saint, that definitely hurt our witness in some circles because people saw that as some type of moral compromise. People saw that as hypocrisy. We're saying integrity doesn't matter. We're upset about Bill Clinton's adultery, his alleged adultery, but we're not upset about a thrice married man who's been a worldly man, allegedly misogynistic, and so on and so forth. So I understand that. And I was always grieved when people talked about almost St. Donald and this amazing Christian man. Well, that's not why I was voting for him. On the flip side, the world was not listening to me before. In other words, when I talked about righteousness, when I talked about truth, when I talked about God, when I talked about holiness, the world was rejecting that message before, and now they just have another reason to reject it. So I don't take the world's advice carte blanche. I know sometimes that there's a perspective that's true that I should consider, and other times it's just the world being the world, if you follow my drift. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, so back to the question of discouragement. I know that there are a lot of problems in America and tragedies now, the forest fires in California. I mean, so many lives lost. It's horrific, shocking. All the upheaval we've been through. But, I mean, are things now worse than, say, in the Great Depression or Civil War, or more lives being taken overall than, say, during World War II and different times of trauma in our nation? Why so much discouragement? I've got some ideas, but love to hear from some of you. Let's start on the phones. Paula in Greensboro, North Carolina, you're on the line of fire. Hello, Paula. I tell you what, let's hold off and let me start here. I asked myself a series of questions before writing my article on why are we so discouraged? Why are so many so discouraged? And again, I'm hearing from people who are discouraged because they are so encouraged when I preach from the last chapter of Saving a Sick America, the Church's Great Opportunity. They are so amazingly encouraged, over the top encouraged. And as I said earlier, it's not because I'm a starry-eyed optimist denying reality. It's not because the sky is falling and I think, oh, isn't that a beautiful display of nature? No, I recognize the problems. And look, I talk about bad news all the time. A lot of you hear about bad news from me. The latest in the sexual revolution, the latest in division in our country, the latest in racial tensions, the latest in natural disasters, the latest in gay activism, the latest in world crises. We're talking about these things all the time, are we not? We are. And yet, I have faith and confidence that God is moving and that we could see an amazing awakening in the days ahead. So why are so many so discouraged? As I thought about it, I feel that a big, big factor is that we were not wired as human beings to get 24/7 influx of news, information, bad news, horror stories, to see day and night images of death and disaster. Now, I know times in history, people go through hellish war conditions, and they live in traumatic situations. But many, of course, are traumatized for life through those things. You know, how many of our soldiers come back with post-traumatic stress disorder because of what they've witnessed and seen? Now, they're right in the midst of it. But whether it's the shooting in Vegas, within seconds, there it is on the cell phone, the people screaming and running and bodies falling. Whether it's a disaster here, whether it's the results of the forest fires, whether it's the latest shooting here, whether it's whatever we're inundated with day and night, and then the constant negative news. What's wrong with Obama? What's wrong with Trump? What's wrong with Congress? What's wrong with America? What's wrong with this? What's wrong with that? Constant bombardment of it. I think it takes its toll on us. I think that's a big reason why so many are so discouraged, which means we have to wean ourselves from a lot of that, wean ourselves from a lot of it, and get fed and enriched by God's word and truth. Hey, my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. That's the place to go to get encouraged and to get informed. New articles, new videos, post it by the day. Check it out, AskDrBrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Save the nation. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
One evangelical leader has written about guns, God, and gravy. Since they all go hand in hand, certain Southern culture and food and, hey, we are hunters and guns and we want to be able to defend ourselves and Second Amendment and God somehow all go together. Evangelicals are often thought of as avid supporters of the Second Amendment, and they would be the first to point out that most of the massacres that we've had, the terrible massacres, take place in gun-free zones or place with over 500 homicides in a year. Just this year, Chicago, that's a gun-free zone in terms of laws. And I've got some friends that are on staff at a mega church in Texas, and they said this is not the place where someone's going to try to come in shooting, because if they do, there are probably 20,000 armed people that'll take the person out. Many others, though, find it contradictory that you can be pro-life and pro-gun. And it's a debate to be had. We know we have a tremendous amount of gun violence in America. The old adage that if you outlaw guns, only outlaws have guns. Over 325 million guns in America, from what I've read. It's a discussion we need to have. Joining me now on the line of fire is Reverend Dr. Rob Shank. He's the president of the Dietrich Bonhoeffer Institute, subject of the recent Emmy Award-winning documentary, The Armor of Light. I've known him for years as a pro-life leader, but he's involved now in the discussion of gun control as well. Rob, it's great to have you today on the line of fire.
Likewise, Dr. Brown. I've been a long-time admirer of yours, so the pleasure is all mine. Thank you.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you so much. What is your position now on gun control, just to introduce the subject, and how does it tie in with your larger pro-life vision?
Well, for me, this is a moral and ethical question. This is a question for a Christian to answer in the depths of our souls and our consciences, because it has to do with the taking of human life, even in a defensive situation. There is still a light that will likely be lost on one side or the other. And that, to me, is a question of paramount moral concern for the believer. So this really isn't about the Second Amendment to me. It's more about the Second Commandment. It's who will have the final say in the life of the believer, including when and how I defend myself or others, and who dies in that equation.
All right. Now, your role as president of the Dietrich Bonhoeffer Institute, I would assume, puts you in harmony with Dietrich Bonhoeffer's philosophy. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, we would hope.
We would hope. Okay. All right. So just in a minute, and then we'll unpack this on the other side of the break. Is it ever right to forcefully resist evil, as Bonhoeffer sought to do with the Nazis in Germany?
Well, I think Bonhoeffer would have said there's no consistent rule on that question. It has to do with all the little details behind that question. What is happening? What is the threat? Who is involved? What are the possible solutions to that problem? Bonhoeffer was very big on asking the question, what is the will of God in this instance, in this moment of time, in this circumstance, as compared to, say, a list of rules and regulations, which he said never apply to the Christian.
All right, got it. So we have the questions on the table. Am I justified in taking a life to save my life? Am I justified in stopping someone with my own power who is potentially going to kill others? Is there an abuse of the Second Amendment? Does it contradict the Second Commandment? We'll see. Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for being part of today's broadcast. If you'd like to weigh in with your own position on guns and believers, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. As you know, I'm not a gun owner myself. I'm not part of the NRA. I've never been. If you're going to bring on someone on TV to debate the Second Amendment, I'm not the guy. However, I know many of you listening are gun owners, and many of you feel it's important for Christians to have these rights under the Second Amendment, that it's a matter of self-preservation. My guest, Reverend Dr. Rob Shank, has been a respected leader in the pro-life movement for many years, but is challenging many of the prevalent evangelical attitudes towards gun ownership in America. Reverend Shank, how long have you been carrying on this particular battle as part of your larger pro-life burden?
Gradually, about 5 years. I really had to have some eye-opening experiences with it. And one was when I was called to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, in the days following the slaughter of five Amish girls in their schoolhouse. I knew a lot of people in that community, many of them supporters of our ministry in Washington, D.C. And I went there, I visited with the families. It was a life-changing experience for me. Then came a mass shooting at the U.S. Navy Yard in Washington, D.C., which was right outside my front door. Practically, I could see what was happening in the yard from my own home. And that brought it up close and personal. 12 people died there. Many more were injured. And in that personal encounter, I was really forced to look at this problem differently than I had looked at it ever before.
All right, so you know the arguments both ways, and obviously you're getting a lot of flack for this and a lot of pushback over it. I'm looking at an article, Meet the Good Guy with a Gun, who stopped a mass shooting at Nashville area church. And I happened to be preaching in that same area that same Sunday morning, got out of the service, and the pastor said, yeah, there was a shooting not far from here. And here's a guy that, according to all the reports we have, was able to short-circuit this guy from killing many others. So his having access to a gun was something that apparently saved many lives. The shooting, for example, at a church, well-known church in Colorado, years back, when it was a security guard that was able to take someone out before they killed more people. You know these arguments, and people would say, well, Washington, D.C. has strict gun control laws, so what we need is guns to be able to defend ourselves against these slaughters. What's your response to that?
Yeah, and those are very legitimate arguments to be made, and they're more than arguments because they're real life. And I can only sit back and say, thank God that those people were in position in those two churches and in other places to act as they did. I don't think that absolves us from looking at these situations critically, scripturally, looking at historic Christian experience, moral instruction, and so forth, and saying, okay, we did the best we could in that instance, and that's to be applauded. And we can be very grateful for it. But then we have to stand back and say, is there any better way to approach this than in that way? And I think often there is. I think there are some really difficult questions to ask. For example, in every situation where the life of a Christian is in threat, is at risk, is it always God's will that the aggressor die and that the Christian believer survive? Is that always God's will? If it were, we wouldn't have any martyrs. We wouldn't have Stephen. We know the disciples were armed. They had swords. Why did they not defend him? There was no defensive response there. Instead, he willingly surrendered his life. And sometimes that's a witness to the gospel. So none of these are easy equations, but I think they demand our prayerful, careful examination.
So what is it that you're primarily taking issue with? Do you think that Christians and their enthusiasm for the right to carry arms, let's put aside hunting and things like that, just for self-defense. Do you think that our enthusiasm to have these and our reaction to what we see as destructive laws that maybe liberals are passing, that we haven't thoroughly evaluated the issue of taking a life, even in self-defense? Do you just think evangelicals and guns are too closely associated? What is it that's most eating at you in this?
Yeah. There are so many things that eat at me. I'm sometimes a neurotic mess, but on this one, what really concerns me, and I think concerns a lot of people, is the fact that there's a kind of popular gun culture that's promulgated by groups like the NRA, of which I will, full disclosure, I am a life member of the NRA.
Oh, you are, and I'm not. That's funny. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it is ironic. And I do think the NRA started out as a certain kind of group, morphed into something different, and is now promoting a kind of popular sort of almost bravado that says you ought to be the most powerful person in the equation. Don't let anybody ever threaten you. And it appeals to our pride, to our ego, to our need to be domineering and powerful, and yet the scripture says that we're to humble ourselves, that pride goes before a fall and a haughty spirit before destruction, that we're to prefer the lives of others over ourselves. Well, that may mean that in a violent confrontation, it's not necessarily God's will that I dominate you in the equation, but in fact, it may call for something entirely different, as we see in the encounter between Jesus and government authority. And speaking of government authority, there is a lot of fear that attends to this. I've spoken to Christians and even pastors, other ministry leaders all over this country about this subject, and I often hear fear possess the people of God. They're afraid of what the federal government may do. They're afraid of threats, you know, to their homes and their families and their children. And fear, I've argued that fear should never be a controlling element in the life of a Christian, because our confidence is somewhere else. Now, I don't suggest that we're naively dismissing all the real threats that exist in the world, but we can become possessed by fear, and I think that's antithetical to faith.
Got it. So you're not advocating irresponsibility, but you are concerned that we could get caught up in the latest conspiratorial threat that the government's going to come in and do this and that. Now, others would say, hey, it's not conspiratorial, it's reality, and that's why we have this in our Bill of Rights, etc. But, Rob, what's important to me is that we're able to discuss these things. In other words, because I'm from New York City. My dad was a senior lawyer in the New York Supreme Court. I was not raised in a certain gun environment, and it's never been part of my life. And I know in the early church, there were even questions about serving as a soldier and things like that. And I'm normally relating to believers being persecuted around the world. And obviously, they use wisdom. They may have to flee in certain ways, but they're not pulling out guns to stop, you know, if the government's trying to come, a Hindu government or Muslim government, to persecute, they're not trying to blow up the government. You know, they understand there's persecution for the faith. I do understand the self-defense issue. I separate that from persecution. I do understand the wisdom issue. It's just not an argument I get into a lot either way. But I think it's important, at least, that we put the issues on the table, especially because there's almost this immediate association that if you are pro-evangelical, you are pro-gun and against gun control of any kind, etc. So I think at least we need to have the discussion. Hey, last thing, we've just got a minute, but Survivor Sunday, what just happened yesterday?
Yeah, we had churches all over the country, ministries, different organizations that led prayer for the survivors of gun violence. And I've been challenged on that, too. People have said, well, why aren't we praying for the victims of all forms of violence? And we should, and we always will. But there's something unique in the gun equation, including what I argue is an inequity between a gun and another and a victim, because you can run from a knife or a club, but it is virtually impossible, as we saw in Las Vegas, to run from a gun and a bullet. They are uniquely engineered to take your life. And so there's an inequity in that, which again for me is a moral and ethical question that demands examination by Christians, but it also leaves the survivors and the victims of gun violence in a unique situation. I think they deserve unique attention and prayer. That's what we did last Sunday.
All right, I've got to jump in. Thank you, sir, for joining us. Much more to discuss. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, check this out. I'm not going to mention the guy's name or anything, but we got our first hate mail on our GoFundMe campaign. I'll tell you in a moment how to connect with us there. I'm not going to mention the guy's name or anything, but he's got his picture. It's quite an interesting picture. And when something comes into GoFundMe, we just get a notification. Someone gave this or posted this encouraging comment, so we just send a thank you note. So check this out. Since Dr. Brown – and of course I'm going to do it in a silly voice. Since Dr. Brown is one of the most hateful persons in this country – this is from a gentleman that he looks like – it looks more like a rifle-owning guy that could be on Duck Dynasty than someone to be a critic of mine. Since Dr. Brown is one of the most hateful persons in this country, I call on GoFundMe to cut all ties with this ill-tempered self-enrichment scheme. Ah, that's it. Watch. If you haven't watched our video yet, all right, check it out. Let me give you the address. Let me give you the website. GoFundMe.com/ Ask Dr. Brown Studio, A-S-K-D-R Brown Studio. GoFundMe.com/ Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown Studio. Watch the video. See what the funds are going towards, all right? This is what he calls an ill-tempered self-enrichment scheme. Oh, it gets better. Dr. Brown even goes to other countries to spread his hate there. Yeah, like when I went to Peru and spoke to congressional leaders and university chancellors in Peru. And this discussion was, as they were considering civil unions for homosexuals or same-sex, quote, marriages. So I was invited to testify to congressional leaders and university chancellors. And I began my opening comments. I'm not here to demonize anyone. I'm not here to provoke hatred against anyone. Gays, lesbians, maybe your family members, friends, fellow workers. All I want to do is give a report for America and let you know what happens when you normalize homosexuality and redefine marriage. Just want to give you a report so you can then decide accordingly. This is spreading hate. Dr. Brown also spews his hate through the American Family Association, an extremist group named by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a hate group. Actually, SPLC, by its own definition of spreading dangerous misinformation about others, they've actually become probably the most dangerous hate group in America, truth be told. And here's one of the terrible things the AFA has done. Oh, this is really bad. They have said to Target, don't let your dressing rooms be gender neutral. We don't think it's right that a man who identifies as a woman can go into the ladies' dressing room. You know how many incidences now Target's had that AFA has documented where you've got a guy going in dressed as a woman, whether he identifies as transgender or is just a ploy because he's a voyeur, either way, trying to take pictures under the dressing room stalls. Target, please don't make bathrooms gender neutral. We don't want our girls going into bathrooms with men who identify as women. We don't feel good about that. That is spreading hate. That's dangerous. They're an extremist group. If that's extremist, it is too late for America. If AFA can mount a boycott against Target for no good reason, just making toy aisles and bathrooms and dressing rooms gender neutral, no good reason. If AFA can mount a boycott against Target for no good reason, SPLC, HRC, Human Rights Campaign, and the LGBT community can mount a boycott against GoFundMe. So, because I've got a campaign on GoFundMe raising funds to help with our video work so we can reach more and more people, especially as we're still in an ongoing battle with YouTube. And you can pray for that because I've finally decided to interact a little bit more aggressively in a friendly way, but more aggressively, and things have escalated to some supervisors now saying, what are you doing to my videos? A new video comes on, and what's it about? Dr. Brown answers your questions. It's our Friday show, right? Because we're doing live stream on YouTube. If you're not aware of that, we're doing live stream on YouTube of virtually every single one of our radio shows, unless I'm traveling and it's pre-recorded. Every live show, we are doing a live stream on YouTube and an audio stream on Facebook. So that it's just a great way to reach more people. And then the moment the show's done, then we're putting it up immediately on YouTube. That means if you're listening to an audio clip on the radio, then you're probably seeing a video clip there. And it could be that I'm doing a debate with someone and it's Skype, so you can see both of us. So the radio quality is just as strong as ever. In fact, we're enhancing what we do to even make each show better and more effective. But the video enables us to reach many more people. So Dr. Brown answers your questions. That was the Friday show. Immediately it gets flagged, not suitable for all reviewers. We have to request a review and go through the whole process and so on, or not suitable for all advertisers. And again, we get a tiny fraction of a penny for each time someone views one of the videos. And then the money that comes in, if it was $10 a month or $10,000 a month or $100,000 a month or a penny a month, it all just goes back into ministry. We're a nonprofit. It just goes back into ministry to help us give away more stuff to more people. So it's a problem when things are constantly getting flagged. And so I said, what are you flagging? What in the world do you flag? Is the Antichrist Islamic? There's nothing against Islam. It's an eschatological discussion. Oh, maybe not be suitable. Whatever show we post, it immediately gets flagged. And then some of them, they'll remove it and they'll be fine. But then many others go through a review process, and some come out fine, and many come out not fine. But my issue is, why are you flagging videos the moment they're up? Not suitable for advertisers. Here, watch. Today it's going to happen. It's going to be the same deal today. If we talk about, why are you discouraged? Here, we'll alter our title. We won't mention gun control or anything like that. All right? We'll alter that. And it could be just because it's my show gets flagged immediately. Now, YouTube can do what it wants to, but it's acting unethically. It's violating its own guidelines. It gives you guidelines as a video creator, and it tells you what's acceptable, what's not. We are within the guidelines. And if we do something that's really hot and heavy and controversial, fine. It may get demonetized. That's fine. We want to get a message out. We want to get a message out. But anyway, stand with us on GoFundMe. It helps us to help many more people. All the funds that come in go immediately right straight back into reaching more people more effectively in more ways. Again, that's gofundme.com/AskDrBrown, AskDrBrown.org. New studies indicate that over 40% of Americans are obese. It's a massive health crisis. I did not have time to get into it today. Maybe we'll pick that up some tomorrow, give you some words of encouragement and help if you struggle. I was a lifelong unhealthy eater, and by God's grace, a little over 3 years ago, my lifestyle was completely changed, and it's been wonderful. So maybe we'll get into that some tomorrow to encourage you. But on our website, AskDrBrown.org, we've got an amazing resource where I coach you. You get the book, Breaking the Stronghold of Food, and then I coach you. I coach you on 3 CDs. As to how to get started and what to do. And then there's a great interview Sid Roth did with Nancy and with me together. And that will encourage you. So 4 CDs and the book. You can get it at AskDrBrown.org. And friends, Jesus is Lord. He's risen from the dead. He sits at the right hand of the Father. That's enough to keep me encouraged forever. See you tomorrow.